Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
Talking.Golf is sponsored by Golf Time Midwest Magazine and the fabulous Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. This is it, the last call for entries in our great golf story contest at Golf Time Midwest Magazine. You can find a link to the online version of the magazine on our website at wisconsin.golf, or you can go over to golftimemag.com. The basics of the contest are this. It has to be 350 words or less, and it has to be funny, fantastic, or of human interest. The lucky winner will be the most popular person around. That's because he or she will win a weekend getaway for six to Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. So go to our website at wisconsin.golf and look for that link to Golf Time Midwest Magazine, or go right to golftimemag.com. The entry form is there, and entries close May 1st. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. Gary D., we heard earlier this week at our meeting that there aren't a ton of entries in this great golf story contest. So if you're listening, you know, you've got to have a great story. Go to golftimemag.com, enter the contest, because I don't know. I can't remember what they said the number was, but I think it was not quite at 50. And sometimes when you ask people to write things, for you and me, it's easy. But that's why we're not eligible for the contest. So, but for others, it takes a little creativity. But I'm sure that there's a lot of great stories out there. And certainly the prize is worth every bit the effort.
Absolutely, Robin. I'm going to amend what you said. For you, it might be easy. For me, it's not easy. So for you, it's easy. One of us, anyway, it's easy.
That's right.
But yeah, it's a great prize. Yeah, people, I would highly encourage people to enter that contest.
Well, we've got golf all over the country. We've got a lot to get to here on Talking.Golf, the final week of April. And it is Conference Golf Championship time. We'll talk about the women from last weekend and the great stuff that happened for UW Green Bay and a couple other Wisconsin golfers elsewhere in the country. But as we record the podcast on a Friday, the first round of both the Big Ten Conference and the Big East Conference championships are in the books. And we'll start first in the Big Ten out of Galloway Township, New Jersey, where the Badger men's golf team really scrambled. Am I seeing this right here, Gary? They scrambled to shoot 299. And they're in third place?
Yeah, and they're only seven shots out of the lead. So they're right in there, you know, one shot behind Northwestern in second place. So outstanding start.
And it's not because I don't believe it can't happen, but when I was looking, I was out golfing this morning, and I had it up on the, on my phone, and they were seemingly down a ways in, on the leaderboard. But they clawed their way back. I mean, it's not great stuff. If you look at, you know, score-wise, Maximine Legros leads the way with a 73. Cameron Huss, a 74. Clayton Tribute, a 74. And Coulter Smith, a 78. They throw out a 79 from Graham Moody. I know that the anticipation early in the week when Mike Wilson met the media in Madison was that the weather was not going to be ideal in Galloway Township, New Jersey. It would look to be the case. Illinois, the number three ranked team in the nation, leading the way at 292. So anything south of 300 is a pretty good score today, Gary. I don't know the particulars on the weather, but it sure seems like the Badgers handled it. And Mike Wilson said as much in his news conference that they like playing in bad weather.
Yeah, they play in plenty of bad weather in the spring at home. But I'm looking at the scores, Rob. It looks like they started on 10 and had a decent, their front nine was pretty decent. And then a lot of bogeys on the back nine, their back nine, which was the front nine. But so I'm guessing the weather was a factor as the day went on. That's what I think, because they ran out of birdies pretty much on the last, you know, 10, 11 holes. So it must have gotten tough for everybody.
Well, I just happened to call up, as I often do on our podcast, Gary. I always have the Weather Channel app handy. Galloway, New Jersey, right now at the end of the day, 53, rain and wind with a gale warning. It's going to be heavy rain through the evening. And right now it is a vat of green over Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., and that part of the country. And somewhere in that mess, Galloway, New Jersey is right there. And let's see what the forecast holds. And it doesn't look much better for tomorrow or Sunday. There's a 91% chance of rain tomorrow, 85% chance of rain on Sunday. I don't know how far into the week you can carry this. I mean, you got to get what? I would think at least 36 holes in the book. It looks, I mean, today it was a high of 56, a low of 52. I mean, that's not great stuff, especially when you have, you know, rain most of the day. It looked like it was going to be nearly a half an inch of rain, at times, windy. And, they handled it well. But, you know, Mike Wilson's credit, you know, they look at that going in. It hasn't been a stellar spring weather-wise up here, so at least they practice in it. And, it's a team that just finds a way to get it done. I think that's the best thing you can say about the Badgers.
Yeah, I agree. You know, they're trailing third-ranked Illinois, which is at 8 over, and 28th-ranked Northwestern, 14 over. But they're at 15 over, and they're ahead of Ohio State University, although by one shot. But they're well ahead of Purdue, which is ranked 36th. So they're in a good spot, Rob. You know, we saw the news conference with Coach Wilson, and he's thinking if they finish top five, maybe top four for sure, they've got a really good chance to get one of the at-large bids. So they just have to hold serve now, I think, for the rest of the way.
And if that happens, I mean, that would be a monumental turnaround in 2 years under Mike Wilson after back-to-back last place finishes in this conference. And going into the week, and this was, something that was out there for the women's tournament too. I think the magic number at the women's tournament was like at 57. And that's one reason why the Badger women at about 80 in the rankings didn't get in at large. But for the Badger men, they're sitting right at the magic number going into conference tournament week at 74. And basically the only thing that can short circuit their efforts to get to the regionals, Gary, are if conferences, mid-major conferences, have situations where their top team is a really good program overall, a top 74 team, and they don't win, and then they fall out of the automatic qualifying spot in their conference, and then they have to be considered with the Wisconsins of the world who aren't, who are ranked 74th and in that, and better, and didn't win their conference as well. Usually those are all the Power Fives. I don't know what it was for the Big Ten women. I'm not quite, I forget how many berths they got at over those six regionals. But, traditionally the Big Ten men get 7 to 8 spots. And, although with only three in the top, I'm guessing that these are the top 50 rankings that get numbered on the leaderboard.
So yeah.
There's not a lot of Big Ten teams in the top 50. But there's a lot just on the outside looking in, and I think it's going to be a very interesting selection show for the Big Ten come next Wednesday.
Well, it's right in front of the Badgers. It's theirs for the taking. They're in a good spot right now. They've got two rounds to go, right?
Yep.
So they, like I said, they just need to hold serve. They need to hold their position, or they, possibly improve it. Second place would be something else, I think, for the Badger men. Can they catch Illinois? It's possible, but they're seven back with two rounds to go. That's not a lot, but we all know what Illinois is capable of. They have a very, very solid lineup. So I would say second place for Wisconsin would be an enormous achievement considering where they were a couple of years ago.
The Illinois Fighting Illini has Pearson Hunt of Heartland, the two-time WIAA state champion, former Wisconsin state amateur champion, currently sitting in a tie for 20th after an opening round 76. They counted a number four from their, a 70 from their number four player, and then a 72 from their number one, a 76 from their, I'm sorry, they actually threw Pearson's score out because they had a pair of 75s ahead of them. So again, a lot of crazy stuff happening out in New Jersey, and it's probably going to end up being a test of survival for these teams looking to get through to the regional. One final question, Gary, about the Big Tens. We talked about this in the last couple talking.golfs. In college golf, you can carry six to a tournament like the conference tournament or the regional, and then you can also sub in. And Graham Moody with a 79 today, do you think that Mike Wilson pulls the trigger and puts Max Schwartz in there, or do you think that 79 was good enough to keep Graham Moody in the lineup for tomorrow?
Boy, I don't know. Rob, I don't think Graham has had the best spring. I think he struggled a little bit, and then he comes out with 79 today. So I think it might be tough to keep him in the lineup. It might be time to sub him out. We'll have to see. But yeah, I think it might be tough to keep him in the lineup after that one.
The one thing I'll say about Graham Moody, though, Gary, is he's from the Pacific Northwest, where rain is a daily occurrence up there. And that might actually bode well for Graham. We'll see. It's nice to have options if you're Mike Wilson, and it's nice to have options when you when it means something like this, and you're not just throwing a guy in trying to rally the team. Right now, you're looking at trying to hold your spot in that in the standings, and then good things may happen come selection Wednesday next week on Golf Channel. The other conference championship involving Wisconsin school is being contested down in South Carolina at Riverton Point Golf and Country Club. That's the Big East Conference Championship. And Marquette University off to a little bit of a slow start. They're T4 after one round with a 293. Seton Hall leads the way. They shot a 200 par, 286. Gary, if you crunch the numbers there, Marquette had the lead after nine holes, if I looked at the scoreboard correctly, with a 143 among counters. And that was two better than Seton Hall, but really struggled. The Marquette really struggled on the back, a 150. Nicholas Evangelio with a 33 on the front and then a 39 on the back. Similar stuff from Josh Robinson, Tyler Leach. The lineup wound up being Nicholas Evangelio, Max Lyons, Tyler Leach, Josh Robinson, and Boom Sima Ari. And right now, you know, and that's the thing that I always, Marquette can be ranked 10th in the country, and they always seem to, you know, when they get to the Big East tournament, these teams that are ranked, you know, 70, 80, 90, or even 100, you know, play like they're a top 25 team around them. And it just really, it baffles my mind at how good some of these teams play. And now you've got not just one, not just two, but five of them that are right there in the mix in and around Marquette.
You know, the good news is that it might not have been their best day, but they're only seven shots out of first place with 36 holes to go. That's seven shots is nothing in 18 holes, and certainly it's very it's not insurmountable, let's put it that way. There's a, you know, Seton Hall played great today. They're two under as a team, but Marquette's only three shots out of second place and only seven out of the lead. So a long way to go in this one, Rob, and I would expect Marquette to move up that leaderboard over the next day and next 2 days for sure.
And again, we're going to talk some women's golf in a second, but a week ago at this time, Gary, when we were recording our podcast, we were talking about UW Green Bay being in seventh place in the women's Horizon League Championship. And I think they were in fifth place, seven shots out of the lead. And they got that back in one day in the second round and then went on to win on Monday and get the automatic qualifying berth. That could definitely happen with Marquette. We've talked about it before. They've got a lot of firepower in that lineup, especially with Max Lyons and Tyler Leach at the two and three spot. You chronicled Nicholas Evangelio before the tournament here, and I know he's expecting, you know, big things. We weren't sure who the four, five, and six would be, and it wound up being Josh Robinson, Boom Sima Ari, and then I don't know if you saw this, Gary, but the number six on golf stat is Aiden Lafferty, which means that he beat out Patrick Adler for that spot. And that's the kind of competition that we talked about that's really, I think, made Marquette sharp. And I, you know, hopefully, whether it manifests itself in just better scores in the five that Steve Bailey put on the course today, or whether it manifests itself with a substitution and Aiden Lafferty going in the lineup, I think it's pretty cool that, Marquette has this, you know, this great depth this year, and we'll see if it pays off the next 2 days.
Yeah, I'm looking at the scores, Rob, and Max Lyons shot one under on the back nine, but everyone else was at least three over par. Or wait, I see Boom was one over, so everyone else was three over. So they probably got to be pretty disappointed with the way they finished off the first round. But like I said, there's a long way to go in this, and they could come out and make a bunch of birdies on their front nine tomorrow and shoot right up into the lead.
It was a 72 for Nicholas Evangelio. It was a 72 for Max Lyons, a 73 out of the number five spot for Boom Sima Ari, 76 for Josh Robinson, and a 77 for Tyler Leach. The fifth-year senior has his score not counting here today. I'm sure that'll motivate the former WIAA state champion from Spring Valley here over the next couple days. Team-wise, Marquette at 293. It's Seton Hall at 286. Butler at 290. Villanova at 291. The Golden Eagles tied with UConn at 293. But we should also point out that there are three teams tied for six, two shots behind Marquette and Connecticut, and that's Georgetown, St. John's, and Creighton. So some pretty good depth and some pretty good balance among the, 11 teams in the Big East Conference. And that's what makes this time of year kind of magical. And we saw that, Gary, in what we saw last week at the Horizon League with the Green Bay women. I mean, they fell behind after one round, and then there was no stopping Lee Ranky's Phoenix as they rallied to get that automatic qualifying berth in the NCAA regional for the first time. And they did so in convincing fashion with Courtney Matschke, obviously using some of that magic she saw when you two played a couple years ago, with that one under par 71, a career low in the final round. And that gets it done for the GB women. And they're off to the regional out in Pullman, Washington, where they'll take on, where among the teams is top-ranked defending national champion Stanford. A lot of excitement in Green Bay and Titletown this week. You get the Aaron Rodgers era comes to an end, and the GB women are off to the postseason.
Lucas Van Ness era starts in Green Bay. That was a little bit of a surprise for me, that pick, Rob. But, you know, talking about the UW Green Bay women, what a time for Courtney Matschke to shoot a career low round. Just the most important day probably of her years at Green Bay, and she does that. She reaches down deep and comes up with that score. That I'm really happy for her and for the whole Green Bay team. That's so much fun to get a chance to go to to the regionals here. It's a great story.
And Gary, some of the stuff that didn't get into our coverage of that win from earlier in the week that I found funny, talking to Coach Ranky on Tuesday after they finished it off. And one was, any wagers as to where they had their celebratory lunch after the tournament?
Oh, wow. No, I have no idea.
Wendy's.
You
want to know why Wendy's?
Why Wendy's? That's the next question.
Why Wendy's is because it was next to the gas station that they used to fuel up. And if they went to Wendy's, they wouldn't spend much time eating because Lee Ranky promised them a trip to the mall on the way back to the airport after they checked out of their hotel. So it was all about priorities. And believe it or not, Gary, and if Lululemon won out over a fancy sit-down lunch. So that's why Wendy's.
Well, that's motivation. That'll motivate your team.
Sure. Well, they're going to be, hopefully they loaded up on stuff and it all fit on the, they flew Southwest. So I think they had extra bags available to fly back to Milwaukee with. They flew a late flight. It was supposed to leave at 10 o'clock on Tuesday. I think it finally left about 10:30, got into Milwaukee just around midnight, a little bit after. Lee Ranky got him back to the GB dorms, I think somewhere around 2:30. And, he was home by 3:15, he said. And then they were up in the morning for the selection show at the Union. And, but these are the things, these are the times that you really live for. And for Ashley Kalka, who's been on campus for 6 years, took a medical redshirt 1 year and then took COVID eligibility this year. Isabel Malecki and Courtney Matschke, both there for 5 years. A year ago at this time, Isabel Malecki just told Lee Ranky that she was coming back. Initially, she was going to call it quits after last year and go into the workforce. And one of the coolest photos I saw was of Isabel Malecki with Charlie Malecki, the former Marquette Golden Eagle, and their parents at the Horizon League Championship down in Florida. I mean, that's a long journey for that family. I mean, they've been, you know, Charlie was, what, 4 or 5 years at Marquette, and now 5 years for Isabel. It's a decade, going on a decade of college golf for that family, and a lot of highs and a lot of lows. But I couldn't think of two better parents behind kids on the golf course than the Malecki family.
Yeah, and it's so cool that Green Bay did it with an all-Wisconsin lineup, correct?
They did, yeah. Ashley Kalka from Beaver Dam, Isabel Malecki from Mequon, Courtney Matschke from Franklin, Kaylee Kitlowski from Stoughton, and Ellie Frisch from Middleton, and their alternate Grace Welch is from Madison. And, you know, I've asked Lee, I mean, you know, there's a lot of good kids just over the border in Illinois, you know, Parkside's going to recruit them. They recruited them for the men. The UW Whitewater women have benefited and gone to many national championships in Division III with, but he wants to keep it Wisconsin. And I think, Gary, it's a good point. One of the things I tweeted out was, Lee Reinke's someone who unequivocally has invested in Wisconsin golf. And it really boggles the mind when Wisconsin talent that he's interested in goes elsewhere to play. I'm not saying it's a bad decision for those kids. That's their decision. But it does boggle right. the mind that he's not getting that. And if this doesn't send a message to kids that he can get the job done at Green Bay, I mean, nothing will. I mean, this is, as if Wisconsin were to somehow beat Illinois in men's golf this week, it would trump what Green Bay did here. But I mean, when Lee Reinke took over the women's program at Green Bay, it could not have been further off the radar than it was. I mean, I don't mean to be, critical to the point of any of this being personal, but from a black and white, rankings, quality of kids they were or weren't getting, I mean, it was a program that was in dire, dire straits. And he, literally a span of 5 or 6 years here, has taken, that core group that was left then, got the most out of it, and then went out and recruited some talent that, was under the radar, wasn't, going to be recruited by Todd Erlein at Wisconsin, but yet was going to work hard. Isabel Malecki and Courtney Matschke were good but not great high school players. I mean, I think Courtney Matschke was going to play college golf no matter what. I think Isabel Malecki was kind of on the fence. And what sets them apart was they worked hard. Ashley Kalka won a state championship at Beaver Dam individually, and so her talent was known. But a lot of these others have, had decent, but not, they haven't been at the head of their class necessarily. And now he's getting, just a slightly better, level of golfer on the women's side, and he needs to do it on the men. And that's another one that, if he could just get that next level of talent that doesn't go to Wisconsin, that doesn't go to Marquette, they could do the same thing in the Horizon League for men. And a lot of good kids have visited there, but they're going elsewhere. And I'm hoping that maybe this sends a message that changes.
Yeah, if you're not a blue chip recruit that has a pick of Power Five schools or can go somewhere south and play, I don't know why you wouldn't at least consider UW Green Bay at this point, especially on the women's side, but on the men's side too. Lee's proven what he can do up there. It's a long winter in Green Bay, but obviously, college teams get away now, and they get away and they go play in warm places in the spring and in the fall. So no problem with that. It's just, he's done a really good job, and I don't know why you wouldn't at least put it on the map when you're considering where to go play Division I golf.
Yeah. And I've been saying it a long time. I mean, out of all the schools that have recruited Wisconsin for the women in women's Division I golf, Green Bay had the most feasible path to a regional berth. They just had to put it together. And Lee wasn't real happy when I asked some of his golfers about the adversity they faced when they lost to transfer at this semester, because he said this has nothing to, unitedly said that this had nothing to do with who was or who wasn't there. This is about the five women that teed it up down at Howie in the Hills, Florida. And I just it's a remarkable story about resiliency and just determination. You've got three gals who are going to be exiting here in a couple weeks, and then you've got two coming back, with actually three coming back, including Grace Welch, the alternate, and then you've got three real good players coming in, in Hannah Dunk, Riley Paczynski out of Stevens Point, and then the transfer out of UW Eau Claire, Lexi Mead, who won the WIAC championship. She's got 2 years of COVID eligibility left, and so she's going to help bridge a gap there. But they, even the women's side, they've got a need for maybe one or two more kids on the roster, and it's the same on the men's side. They're losing a couple, but they can really raise that bar. So we'll see. I think the attention that Green Bay got this week was good for Lee Reinke. It was good for the program, and hopefully it'll be good for Wisconsin, junior golfers to see that some pretty good golf is being played here. That's not to say that going away isn't bad, as two golfers found, Mia Seaman, who spent 4 years at South Dakota State, did a grad transfer to Lipscomb University in Nashville, Tennessee. She'll be going to an NCAA regional in Westfield, Indiana. And then Abby Caviani out of Kettle Moraine High School, Wales, Wisconsin, down at Missouri State, led the Bears to an NCAA regional berth. Well, first of all, a conference championship in the Missouri Valley Conference. And they're going down to the TPC San Antonio to play their regional. Lipscomb got some love on the selection show, Gary, because their coach left at the end of August, literally a week before the season. She got hired at Alabama Birmingham, her alma mater, to be the women's coach. And their interim coach is a woman who was an assistant golf coach last year after being the assistant women's soccer coach for her husband at Lipscomb the 9 years before that. And apparently a very good motivational human being, because she's been able to, you know, rally this Lipscomb team, which has over the course of the last 3 years, three transfers in addition to the recruiting that the recruited athletes that they brought in from the get-go. So just like, you know, a lot of teams in college golf, Gary, you go through all sorts of, you know, changes over 4 years. And Mia Seaman here in her fifth year of college golf has her first opportunity to play in the postseason. And she'll play just about four and a half hours from home in Milton, Wisconsin. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's very cool. Both Mia and Abby are both fifth-year players, correct?
Correct, yep. Took advantage of COVID eligibility and came back and made it all pay off. And, you know, and I got a neat email from Abby's dad, Jay Caviani, because I think it was either Abby's freshman or sophomore year, she won the Missouri Valley Conference individually. And I think it might have even been, I have to go back and look, might have been the same year that George Kneiser won the Horizon League for the men at UW Green Bay. And on the men's side, they had a provision that the conference champion in men's golf gets an automatic individual berth in the NCAA regionals, but they didn't have that provision for the women. So Abby misses there and comes back the next year, and they miss going to regionals by losing conference by one shot. And so it was getting to the point where Abby probably wondered if she was ever going to get there. And now she's at the regional and, you know, gets to play down at the TPC San Antonio, which is where they play the Valero Texas Open on the PGA. So pretty cool stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a team of two individuals moving on to regionals for women. And that's great. It's really cool to see these women, young women, have this opportunity in front of them.
And last but not least, I just got an email today that clued me in that Jolie Guyette, who has spent her 2 years of college golf out here at Mesa Community College in Arizona, her team got one of the at-large berths to the NJCAA National Tournament, which will be held May 9th through the 12th in Garden City, Kansas. And I know that it's likely that Jolie will go on to play two more years of college golf, either at the Division II or probably low to mid Division I level. And this doesn't hurt her chances there. So still a lot of golfers, alive in the postseason. We talked about the Badgers and Marquette for men and playing conference tournaments, but you've got a lot of other men playing, including Blake Wisdom in the Patriot League Conference Championship. That's going on. And then when he's done there, Gary, he'll be transferring to UW, presumably taking the place of one of these great grad transfers that Mike Wilson brought in this year, like Clayton Tribe or Maximine Ligros. And again, the process continues. It really is not easy being a college golf coach, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, Mike's done a great job with that transfer portal. And, you know, over at Marquette, you know, Coach Bailey's used it one time, and or basically has gone into it once and tried to get somebody, and that was the young man I wrote about, Nicholas Evangelio. So those names pop up in the transfer portal, and you've got to at least look at them these days, right?
You sure do. And you know, again, it's and Lexi Mead going from, you know, UW Eau Claire to UW Green Bay on the women's side, you know, that's something we haven't seen very much in, but it's something that can happen. I mean, you know, nobody's wed to where they're at anymore. And certainly in other sports, they seem to be, you've got, I mean, there's stories now of guys that have been at four or five universities in their, you know, 5 year eligibility window. And I think it'll help, Gary, with COVID eligibility being done here very soon. I think that's kind of made it the wild, wild west, because these kids have 5 and 6 years of eligibility if you were on a roster during COVID, and we're starting to cycle out of that. This high school season in Wisconsin is the last that will have kids on a roster that lost a year. This year's seniors didn't play as freshmen because COVID canceled the high school season in Wisconsin. So we're slowly coming out of that, but it sure is a different time than what coaches 20 and 30 years ago had to live through, when they recruit kids and the only time they'd leave is if they, you know, didn't see an opportunity to play. And that usually meant that they were just going to be, you know, regular students going to football games.
Rob, you said something really interesting, because, you know, I haven't thought about COVID much lately, but it's hard to believe that the kids who are seniors now lost their freshman year. I guess we're 3 years past the worst of the pandemic, and hopefully, you know, past the worst of it forever, and things just get better and better. But yeah, that's boy, time flies. It was just, I guess it was 3 years ago that I was in the hospital with it. So, geez, that's amazing.
It is. So it will continue to follow the and post results from the College Golf Championships here this week, and Gary will monitor the selection show next week to see what's going on in terms of potentially one or two Wisconsin representatives or more with individuals from around the country, perhaps getting the opportunity to play in the postseason. Of course, the regionals feed the national championship, which will return to Greyhawk Golf Club out here in Scottsdale, Arizona, not too far from the western headquarters of Wisconsin.golf. We should also give a scan around the leaderboards on the various professional tours. And some, I told Gary before we started the podcast that a lot of interesting stuff happening today. And one of those things happening down in Lima, Peru, of all places, Stoughton Sam Anderson, the former Badger, a second round 64. And he currently leads the Diners Club Peru Open on the PGA Tour Latino America with a 1,200 total. He's three shots clear of Daniel Hudson, an American who shot 68-67. Former Badger Griffin Barella out of Colorado, he shot a 500 par 67 today, moved up 43 spots on the leaderboard into T9. It looks as though Kaylor Steger out of Mount Pleasant may miss the cut. He shot 73 yesterday. He's currently, as we record the podcast, two over through 15 on Friday, and he is in a tie for 94th place. But Gary D'Amato, Sam Anderson has a lot of game. We've seen that in stadiums and state opens. And today he went out and fired a round that really could pay dividends, because I think you tweeted out earlier this week the news out of the PGA Tour that the PGA Tour Latino America and PGA Tour Canada will merge in 2024. And that that feeder program, if you have status and footing on either one of those tours in 23, it tells me you're going to be in pretty good shape for 24 when those two, you know, programs come together and provide, I think, even greater access to the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. I think that's a great move by the PGA Tour. And it looks like they're going to be playing, you know, those tournaments from South America all the way up to Canada, with some stops in the U.S. And as you mentioned, Sam Anderson in the lead, three-shot lead halfway through the tournament. Hope he can hold on. Yeah, we both have written quite a bit about Sam over the years. Really talented young man, big, strong, you know, lanky guy who hits the ball a mile, like they all do these days. But it would be super cool to see him hang on to that lead. Long way to go, but certainly 68-64 is a fantastic start.
The senior tour is in action at the Insperity Invitational at the Woodlands in just outside of Houston, Texas. Steve Stricker, an opening round 400 par 68. Jerry Kelly, a 100 par 71. They are currently chasing a trio of golfers at the top of the leaderboard, defending Schwab Cup champion Stephen Alker, Justin Leonard, and Gary D'Amato. We have a Colin Montgomery sighting. Monty with a 66 today, one of his better rounds in a long time. And we've always enjoyed talking to Monty at the AmFam Championship. He just has a certain way about him, and a certain way with words, and a unique perspective on the game of golf. So a very decorated leaderboard down there at the Woodlands.
It is. And, you know, Stricker, ho-hum 68. When does he not shoot 68 or better on the Champions Tour, Rob? He has been a mainstay on leaderboards now for a couple of years. No surprise there at all. Little surprise to see Mr. Montgomery on top. But yeah, you're right. He's fun to talk to. Stephen Elker, too, Rob, keeping it going after that year he had last year. For people who thought he might have been a one-year wonder, it's obviously not the case. He's got one of the prettiest swings out there, I think.
And Stephen Elker, with a little bit of adversity early in the year when he lost his caddy, I believe, to cancer, and it's kind of regrouped that way. It's always a disruption, you know, that you don't really appreciate that pairing of player and caddy until that isn't available. And you know, that golden connection there last year with Stephen Elker really got derailed here this year. And our thoughts and prayers go out there to the families of those involved. But speaking of caddies, Eric Van Rooyen and Austin Smotherman are currently in second and third place, respectively, as we record the podcast on a Friday at the Mexican Open at Vedanta. And that means that we have dueling Goggerts on the bag. Alex Goggert in the bag of Eric Van Rooyen, who shot 66 in the second round on Friday, and Austin Goggert on the bag of Alex Smotherman, who's currently on the golf course at 10 under par and in third place. I don't fancy the Goggerts in Mexico as being kind of the winning connection, but certainly that's the connection between Van Rooyen, Smotherman, and the top of the leaderboard. I don't know. You can't make any other explanation for it.
No. One, if not both of those guys are in for pretty nice paydays if their guys can hold on to where they are. But they've got to catch Tony Finau. And as we all have seen, he's probably going to be tough to catch with a great start. But they're right there, you know, one in three shots behind Tony halfway through the tournament. Austin Smotherman isn't finished yet either, is he, Rob, as we record this podcast?
No,
he's
no.
Got a few holes to go.
Right, and he opened. He's through 13 holes at 10 under in the second round, and he shot 63 in the opening round. So he was in first place. Eric Van Rooyen was in second place. Van Rooyen with a 66 today. You mentioned Tony Finau. He opened with 65, came back with a 64. So the scoring is low, but John Rahm, who he went eagle birdie at, I believe it was 6 and 7, parred 8. And then went double bogey on the par 3 ninth and bogey on the par 4 10th. And so he was at even, but now he's gone back to 3 under. So there's a lot of movement there. A lot of birdies we made, but there's also some spots for bogeys as they showcase the game of golf down in Mexico. And it's kind of cool to see a couple caddies on the bag and in the contention there. Gary, you know, we've been talking a lot about, looking forward longingly to the start of the competitive golf season in Wisconsin, and it's going to happen on Tuesday, the first event on the WSGA calendar, the U.S. Open local qualifying, will take place at Bishop's Bay Country Club in Middleton, and I don't know, it's a pretty good field, and Jeff Perkel in my opinion, saved the best for last. The final tee time going off just before noon at Bishop's Bay. Harrison Ott, Jack Schultz, and Cameron Huss. Cameron Huss, of course, of the Badgers. Jack Schultz, a multi-time Wisconsin State Golf Association Player of the Year. And Harrison Ott just wrapped up a great career at Vanderbilt and is trying to make his way on the Corn Ferry Tour. A lot of other guys could enter in the mix, but if I'm picking, I'll take that last group. You can have the field this time.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Rob. That last group, that last threesome is loaded with talent. A lot of other big names, though, in that field. I think they said originally 77, but they must have had a couple withdrawals. I think I just counted 74 guys entered in the first stage of U.S. Open qualifying. And actually, Rob, on Monday, the day before, we have our day before the U.S. Open local qualifying, we have the Sheboygan Riverdale Tournament of Champions up in Sheboygan. Weather doesn't look great, but so we kick off the year with a nice invitational tournament, and then some really serious golf with U.S. Open local qualifying on Monday and Tuesday.
What you know, we've covered events at Bishop's Bay before. It's a course that typically has good greens, but we're also early in the year. I mean, how do you think the this long wait to get out of the golf course this spring is going to impact U.S. Open local?
You know, it's funny, Rob. I've covered a lot of these U.S. Open local qualifiers. They're always around this, you know, early May. Sometimes a couple of them have stretched in the mid-May, but it seems like the weather is always bad at these things. I can't remember one, Rob, where we had a 75-degree, you know, nice spring day. It's always 48 to 54 degrees. A few years ago, the one at at Wild Rock was just miserable conditions. And I hope we don't have that kind of weather on Tuesday. It doesn't look like we will. But it seems like you've got to bring your your weather gear when you play in these U.S. Open weather, U.S. Open local qualifiers.
Well, and you mentioned that one up at Wild Rock in the Dells, and the guy who treated that like just another day on the golf course, Austin Kanczorski, the former Marquette golfer who's played quite well in a lot of the Monday qualifiers already this spring on the Korn Ferry Tour, is in that 11:30 pairing along with Badger golfer Ryan Smith and Ricky Kuiper out of Racine. So again, you know, you just never know in these things where the qualifiers are going to emerge from. We know where they go. They go to about, what, 6-7 sectional qualifiers. So it's 18 at the local, then it's the 36-hole grind at the sectional qualifiers, which is always seen as the longest day of golf, but it's the one that everybody looks for because there's so many great Cinderella stories to come out of the sectional. And that's what these guys are going to be, you know, competing for on Tuesday at Bishop's Bay.
Yeah, typically I think our local in Wisconsin gets 4 spots, sometimes 5 if the field is big enough. I'm guessing this will be a 4 spotter, Rob. I don't. Does it say in the? I went online. I don't know if it says, you know, how many spots they get, but basically they're playing. These 74 guys are playing for 4 or 5 spots to advance to this. I guess they call it final qualifying now. I always call
That's
it
right.
Sectional qualifying.
Yeah, so we've changed the lingo, haven't we?
Yeah.
I don't see where it says, and they may not establish that until they know who's all teeing it up on Tuesday. But
right.
Yeah, just says 77 players right now in the field. And, of course, everybody playing for a spot down the road, June 15th through the 18th. Gary D'Amato will be there at Los Angeles Country Club for the 123rd U.S. Open. And Gary, we've got another major to get to before we get to the U.S. Open. But, you know, we always start thinking about it with the U.S. Open local qualifying. So, and then I should also mention, we haven't made a big deal of it because the 18-holers up in the Northwoods haven't opened yet. Believe it or not, Northwoods and Rhinelander, St. Germain Golf Course, Eagle River Golf Course, Timber Ridge, Trout Lake, they're still sitting pat waiting for the courses to dry out after all that snow that they got earlier this month. And but we do have 2 courses in the Northwoods. It's a golf course in Pickerel, Wisconsin, and Club Ecstasy in Gleason, which it could be in the central part. You know, it's kind of attached to Merrill-Wassa, but Gleason, just north of Merrill and just north of Antigo, a little bar golf course that I heard is pretty fun. And that just opened, and but right now we're not even and Nemadji Golf Course in Superior, Gary, yesterday or today opened its driving range and its par 3 course, but the remainder of that 36 hole complex, they're waiting for parts of it to dry out. I just can't imagine, you know, the golf in some parts of this, and we're seeing some of these schools in the north part of the state finally, you know, being able to get out at the high school level and play a few matches. But man, it's been a long, long wait in some parts for the golf season to start.
It's been a horrible April, really. It has been. And but I looked at the long range forecast, Rob, and it looks like finally maybe around May 7th, 8th, 9th, and going forward, finally we get a stretch of, at least in the south part of the state, 70-degree weather, a nice stretch of weather. So we're definitely due. I played Alpine Valley Golf Resort today, Rob, with some
really?
Friends. Yeah, and I played it this morning, and the course was in really good shape. They had just aerified the greens at the very end of last season, and so they were a little bumpy, but otherwise everything was really good. The grass was green, the turf was growing, the greens rolled pretty good for being, you know, having a few bumps in them. And I don't know if you ever played there, Rob, but that is a really, really beautiful golf course with a lot of ups and downs and a lot of views of the whole valley and the ski hill up there. It's a nice place.
I'm one of the few people, Gary, that not only hasn't golfed the resort course, and I don't ski.
Me neither.
And I've never been to a concert at Alpine Valley.
No, no way. Wow, I saw Boss Skaggs there when I was at Whitewater, Rob. I'm dating myself now.
I know my wife has seen, I don't know who was there back in the day, but no, that's the one outdoor music venue I haven't been to. I think I wasn't to the one in Chicago, but was to one in Michigan. And then, of course, was at the, I suppose, what is now the American Family Insurance Amphitheater at Summerfest. But yeah, no, I haven't been there. So kudos to you for getting out there. And down here, Gary, we're sending all the snowbirds your way. They're leaving. There's an exodus from Arizona this weekend. All the at our club, all the seasonal memberships end on April 30th. So the line of cars out of town is going to be pretty pronounced here on Sunday and Monday and into Tuesday. So they're all and it's funny because they all look at that same forecast you are, and they're going, "Do we really want to go back?" But I don't know. I think I'm with you. I think the best of the weather is in front of us. And as we wrap up our podcast, month of April, don't let the screen door hit you on the way out the door.
Exactly. May is going to be much better. I can promise you that, Rob.
Well, we hope so. Well, Gary, I appreciate it. Go get yourself a fish fry, and we will talk golf again next week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right. Talking.Golf, sponsored by Golf Time Midwest Magazine and the fabulous Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. This is it. This is your last call for entries in our great golf story contest at Golf Time Midwest Magazine. You can find a link to the online version of the magazine on our website at wisconsin.golf, or you can go over to golftimemag.com. The basics of the contest are this. You need to keep it to 350 words or less, and the story has to be funny, fantastic, or of human interest. A lucky winner will be chosen at random, and that person will be the most popular person around. That's because he or she will win a weekend getaway for six to the aforementioned Eagle Ridge Resort in Galena. So go to our website at wisconsin.golf and click on the links, or you can also go right to the contest entry blank available at golftimemag.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.